Benjamin can have love for the trucky. Beautiful minds, but we love getting ugly. Risk takers with a clover, man, we love getting lucky. You run, we chase fire, I love when it ducks me. Tones go off, house watch, read the address out. 1075, get up off the magic couch. 500 gallons prepared for the baddest drought. Who else you want on the way when disaster's out? Can't even get a little bit rattled when you enter with exit apparel. Mayday member down, they'll drag you. You won't get this from every Tom, Dick, and Harold, but here's a view from the top floor with Mickey Farrell.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of A View from the Top Floor. In my last episode, episode 16, we talked about the backup line in regards to lithium-ion battery fires and how crucial it is that we don't overcommit that line. We must be charged and ready to go to work. Today, I want to talk about a new type of exposure problem, especially when dealing with lithium-ion battery fires. Now, this is something where I don't know any documented cases quite yet, but I think that's something that we have to keep our eye on as far as the new type of exposure problem, direct impingement, thermal impact, and pressurized fire travel. Three elements of these battery fires that we have to keep an eye on. Three elements that no one's talking about. You know, we're all talking about thermal runaway, hydrogen fluoride off-gassing, overpacking, cell block, all very important aspects of fighting lithium-ion battery fires, but we're not talking about basic strategy and tactics of how we operate in fires and how that's impacting what we do, especially on the floor above now. So just reviewing last episode, thermal runaway is vulnerable at 140 to 275 degrees Fahrenheit. So I'm fairly certain, other than a project-type building or a fireproof building, fire-resistant building, we're hitting these temperatures very, very quickly on the floor above the fire. So let me paint the picture for you. You're on the floor above. You're doing your search. We're searching for life for number one, of course, and then fire travel. You're two, three, six rooms deep from the point of entry, always sizing up our second means of egress, knowing where those aerial ladders are, those buckets are, knowing where fire escapes are, or calling for portable ground ladders as we make our progression throughout that floor above. But we're not looking for our thermally loaded devices, that thermal impacted device. Again, 140 degrees, we're hitting those temperatures. So it's very, very reasonable to understand or think or have the idea that we could have a device on the floor above while we're searching deep into an apartment, going into runaway, ultimately waiting to fail. And if it was to fail, more or less, it's like a hand grenade going off on the floor above. When that fails, it fails very, very rapidly. 6 to 12 seconds, complete flashover of the room that it's in. So if you happen to be in the room when that device goes off, I'm not sure you have time to react to even get out. And if you happen to be remote within that apartment that you're searching, you're going to be pushed through the window rather quickly. So it's just a different way of looking at the details and how we're searching on the floor above. It adds one more element of surprise, one more element of danger. We all know the floor above is a dangerous place to be. That's why we have to be there, because the victims are in most danger. However, now there's a new element, that new exposure problem. Now, let's talk about direct impact now. So any fire we have on the fire, if we have extension to the floor above, we could have extension directly impacting a micromobility device in an apartment or in a bedroom, not realizing it while we're doing our search. Yes, we're searching for life. We're searching for fire travel. But now we have a direct impingement on a battery on the floor above. Again, sending it into runaway, having it ultimately fail, again, cutting us off our point of egress or pushing us to windows. Very, very dangerous condition. Now, pressurized fire travel. Again, this is something else that I feel that's not so much changing the game, but our size up changes. You know, at one time, the fire service I fell in love with was the legacy fires. Leather helmets, long coats, three-quarter boots. Turn the corner, fires out 2, 3, 4 windows, right? That's the fire service I fell in love with. I'm fairly certain it's the fire service most of you fell in love with. Then the introduction of thermal pane windows and petroleum-based products, we went into the modern stage of firefighting, mid-90s to the 2000s, right? With that, how many times do we go to fires and it's hot and smoky, but not too hot and not too smoky, and there's no fire because the fire snuffs itself out because of the thermal pane windows. Thermal pane windows changed the game of firefighting in that mid-90s, late 80s, going into the 2000s. Again, that modern stage of firefighting. Now, in my opinion, we're in this stage of continuous firefighting where these batteries are always continuously burning. Right, so we're not changing our tactics per se. Like, we didn't change our tactics going from legacy to modern. We just looked at things a little bit more differently. Now we're going to go from modern to continuous. And again, we can't be changing our tactics. We just have to look at the details. The devil is in the details of everything we do. So, sizing up these fires. Heavy fire on arrival. 2 in the afternoon, midday fire. We're getting it more than ever now. When you see a heavy fire on arrival, fire at multiple windows, you have to start thinking that it's a lithium-ion battery-based fire. Because when these devices fail, there's a concussion that blows out the window frame completely. So the days of turning the corner and seeing nothing because of thermal pane windows are over. Now, we still have those when we have a couch on fire, a mattress on fire, a good fire. These windows still aren't failing, but now we're dealing with these batteries. Most times you turn the corner, heavy fire on arrival, and fire out windows. So when we started going to these fires, I didn't think you could really size them up. But now I think a great size up tool is when you are going to these fires midday and we do see the heavy fire, start thinking 3, 10, 14 steps ahead of what you're doing, what you're thinking, especially on the floor above now, because we're having pressurized fire travel. You could have fire on multiple floors as well as smoke on multiple floors. I'm fairly certain we all saw that fire in Harlem a couple weeks ago where they made the grab on the ropes and tremendous job, like legendary firefighting. However, that was a lithium ion battery fire that failed. The apartment door was left open on the lower floors, pressurizing that stairwell with heavy fire, pushing victims on the upper floors to the windows. So even with that door closed, I think it's something to consider that when we do have a lithium ion battery fire that fails completely in an apartment or an older building, we will have fire on multiple floors pushing through every pipe chase and void. So when we get to the floors above, we have to open frequently and continuously. Right? It's just something to think about, especially when it comes to delegating manpower or placing the pieces like a chess match, thinking 3, 4, 10 steps ahead of where you have to be in that fire building. Gaining position on the fire is everything. Every fire we go to, we have to gain position. But now we have to think about these positions a little bit more in detail. You know, in New York City, when you get a fire that has window bars, we automatically get a window bar truck assigned to just remove window bars. I think it's something to think about moving forward, not just New York City and any department, where we're going to lithium ion battery fires, maybe assign 2 more engines to the fire just to get that rapid line deployment now on the floor above. So breaking it down, we get the first line in operation, we're making progress. Now we get that backup line charged and ready on the fire floor, not overcommitting it anywhere else in the fire building in case there was a device thermally loaded that ultimately fails and burns that line through. Now we have to talk about that rapid line deployment to the floor above in case there was an exposure of thermal, direct, or pressurized fire travel on the floor above the fire. So if a device was to fail, that line is in place to protect the members searching deep into that apartment. All right. So just some ideas I've been brainstorming. Again, I don't know of any documented cases from any of this. It's just I'm kind of trying to look at this in a forward-thinking mindset rather than a reactive mindset. So when we go to these fires, I'm already thinking about these devices. I'm already thinking 3, 10 steps ahead, knowing that if I do find a device on the floor above, maybe isolate it into the bathroom if I can. If I can go it out the window and get it out of the building, even better. But it's just something to think about, something to talk about at the kitchen table. And it's something, again, to just, you know, we're learning as we're going to these fires. And it's a matter of time where I truly feel that the floor above, we're going to have a different type of exposure problem. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. This is Mickey Farrell. My next episode after this, I'll probably be on the road. I'm heading out to Denver and Boulder for a class with Anthony Arouette in Port City Fire Training. Looking forward to that. And then we're doing the webinar on the 29th with Fire Engineering Truck Intellect. So that link is in my bio on Instagram or it's on the Fire Engineering website. And then FDIC, do a Fire Academy in the fire floor. So that's my upcoming events if you want to check any of it out. Any questions about this or any ideas or topics you want to chat, hit me up in the DM. And that's it, man. So have a good one. Thanks.